Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us another Thursday evening, and it's obviously the beginning of fall because it's getting cool out there. We can hear the peepers. I don't know if you have them where you are, but we have crickets and tree frogs that make a wonderful sound. They only do it for about a month in the late summer and early fall. And the sky is changing colors, and the students are back, which is one of the things about living in a college town. So tonight's guest is Bishop Christina Rake, who is a regular on the show because we have so much fun. How often do you find somebody that's got deep theological knowledge, is incredibly smart on all levels, including being able to kick around quantum physics, and is just wicked funny. So we're going to have a good time talking about what she calls creepy Christianity. Things that are either paranormal events or miracles, but we'll figure out what we should call them as we go along. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And I often hear the term hacker used in a pejorative way, because in the internet world, in the computer world, hackers are people that break into things where they are not invited and do damage. But in the larger scheme of things and in the history of how stuff gets learned and stuff gets used, the people that play with things, the people that take things apart and put them back together and wonder how it works and how to make it better, are the ones that make most of the important changes. And while people think about scientists and engineers as being the folks that do that, it's often the people who are mechanics and technicians who are very intimate with whatever the technology is. And that could be a farmer, it could be a tailor or a seamstress, it could be any number of people that do something and are working with the equipment all the time, working with the materials all the time, and keep asking the question, how can I do this better? How can I do it faster? How does this work? What would be some different way to approach this that would change things and make life better? So that, in the old days, was called a tinker. When tinker came from the sound of a hammer on a piece of metal. Later, the term hacker came up, and that was really a kind of quasi-radio science term for somebody who, when things didn't work, could fuss around with it and had enough intuition and enough skill and enough knowledge to make things work, even though it didn't seem like they're ever going to work again. And these are some of the most important people in the world. You know, my dad used to say, anybody that you ever meet knows more than you do about something and may know a whole lot more than you ever realized existed about the thing that they've done for most of their life. And that's true for janitors. That's true for people that do any skill, even the most menial thing. They know in a very deep way things that you never would have run across. And when you start talking to them and you start finding things out, you get all kinds of stuff. So why am I talking about this? I could talk about one of my high school friends who became a microwave technician and fixed the things that the engineers designed, but didn't actually work unless you tinkered with them. So every production piece had to be tweaked by the mechanics. I can talk about some of the car mechanics I know that could make things happen that, according to the specifications, shouldn't work that way. But they knew how to make it work that way. But the reason I'm mentioning it is people that do work like shamanic practitioners and any of the other people who do things that seem to be impossible involving the unseen world basically are hackers. what we do is take a look at things and go, well, how does this work exactly? And the first thing that happens is you get the instruction manual, right? And, you know, somebody says, well, this is how you do it. Do this, this, and this. And you do that, and you figure out how it works. And then you go, well, what if I did this? And what if I did that? And what if we changed this before we did that? And as you learn more and more and you ask more questions and you continue to be curious and you continue to have the courage to go beyond whatever limitations that have been set for you or that you set on yourself, you wind up being able to do stuff that other people look at and say is magic. Well, I'm sure Christina will remember who the quote is from. Somebody famous said, any technology that's sufficiently sophisticated can't be distinguished from magic. So is magic a very sophisticated technology, or is very sophisticated technology magic? I think in the moment, both are true, or they go back and forth between the two definitions. But we will be talking about some things that are either magic or miracles or whatever they are, but we probably won't figure that out. And certainly a lot of the stuff that we talk about on this show falls into that realm of people who are hackers who are very, very good at what they do and have learned how to do things that other people didn't even think of doing. So, all that said, that's tonight's Metaphysical Musing, and I'm looking forward to hanging out with my good friend, Bishop Christina Rake. You there, Christina?
I'm here. Thank you.
And you have this little corner of what you love to find out about that you call creepy Christianity. So why don't you give people a quick introduction to who you are, because not everybody has had the pleasure of meeting you and hearing your brilliance. And then tell us how you got into this corner called creepy Christianity.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm Bishop Christina Rake. I am the apostolic leader of the Charismatic Universalist Church. It's an independent Catholic church. It's part of the Catholic communion, but we're what would be called socially liberal. We basically believe that there should be no obstacles between God and his people, and we don't throw any up. I was into the paranormal, and I lived in a haunted house. I'm a psychic medium. I'm currently a paranormal investigator, but that got me into this whole, you know, the In Search of realm. As a kid, I used to sit in front of the TV when that came on and just drool. I was, oh my God, this is so amazing. It was in studying that I came across all of the strange stuff, all of these quote-unquote miracles, all these things that had happened that science could not explain. And much of it happened in the age of science when there were tools to study these things, and even doctors and atheists scratching their head and saying, I give up, I convert. And it was in reading this that nobody believes me when I say this in parishes, but it was these things that really drew me into becoming a Christian and then eventually a Catholic. I wasn't a Christian for most of my life. So these sorts of things really got me thinking about how the universe works, where the rules that we think we know get broken, and how it is that everything from a Marian apparition to a UFO landing site to a crop circle to a Bigfoot sighting all seem to have the same sort of rules and signs and symptoms. So that's got me thinking, and I always said before I die, I won't have all the answers, but I'm going to formulate one hell of a question.
You know I'm going to steal that.
Oh, go for it.
So, what were some of these things that caught your interest?
Well, I'd say the first was the stigmata. A lot of people have heard the term. There have been movies made about it. And of course, one of them was called The Stigmata and it involved it. And it's when a person gets the wounds of Christ somewhere in their body. They're not formed by nature. There are all these sets of rules for someone to be called a stigmatist, which is someone who has the stigmata. But essentially, if I were to explain it simply, it's when you have bleeding in your hands and feet or side, which would be the nails that crucified Christ, and then the side being the spear that pierced him. And some people also get injuries around their head where a crown of thorns might be placed on them. And so these things spontaneously erupt on the person at some point in their lives, usually during intense meditation. And for people, for instance, like Padre Pio, now Saint Padre Pio, who died in 1968, he lived with them for 50 years. And he lost a pint of blood a day. They measured it.
Wow.
And so it was in studying these that I started to come across the other miracles. But the stigmata just fascinated me, absolutely fascinated me. And I started researching all the different questions about it, and came across some really fascinating studies in medical journals. Where, for instance, in The Lancet in 1947, they were able to hypnotize a gentleman who had been kidnapped and viciously tortured. And during the hypnosis, they had him relive the incident, and he became so intensely into what happened that he actually created cuts on his body just from his emotions. And rope burns on his hands. And this is 1947, so they have right. pictures, they have all of that. And so you start to wonder, well, is it the same thing? And you grow deeper and deeper into it. And in some cases, maybe. In others, no. So that's the one that really got me fascinated about the whole creepy Christianity, I call it, because it's stuff people haven't heard of. And if they did, they probably run to another faith. But yeah, that's the one that got
me. Well, and to just to be fair, the fact that the things like stigmata are related to the stories within Christianity doesn't necessarily mean that not only that Christianity is about that or that they're directly related to it. That's where it's, what's the line between power of the mind, a paranormal event, which is basically something that defies the normal laws of physics, and a miracle, which would be more connected directly to something in a religious setting. And that's part of my fascination with the stories, is where's the line here? And, you know, we can document that they happened, but what are the various ways to understand it?
Well, exactly. And I would say that just so people know, just get an idea of this before I talk about the miraculous end versus the paranormal end with the stigmata, is that there were listed by Dr. Imbert in the 1900s, 362 verified stigmatists throughout history.
Mm.
62 have become saints in the Catholic Church. Only 41 of those were men. The rest were all women.
Mm.
So there's probably a biological component, but what I always tell people is the fact that we're wired for God proof that there is no God, or is it just proof that he wired us for him? <There's> the chicken or the egg.
Yeah.
For instance, with Padre Pio, I bring him up only because he's modern. With him, I would lean towards the religious because, whereas you have other people who have had these marks appear, with him, that was not the center of his ministry. He was ordered by the church to hide it. He had to wear gloves. He was required to wear gloves everywhere unless he was saying Mass, and those are the only photos of the stigmata we have. He had to submit to over 20 different medical investigations. But more importantly, he sat in a confessional for 14 hours a day, every day, listening to people with their problems, with their sins, with their concerns. He really spread love of God, love of each other, and people who came to him were non-Catholics or non-Christians. Muslims would come to him. Atheists would come to him. One atheist came to him to ask him for advice about building a church, and he said to him, you know, Padre, I don't believe in God. And Padre Pio said, that's okay. Don't worry about it. God believes in you.
Right. Right.
So I think that when you look at miracles, there's an extension of converting people, if not to a particular faith, then to the idea that there is an external, unchanging absolute in the universe concerned with our welfare. That's where I would probably draw the line between paranormal and religious. Was it just an event that sort of led the person into living a strange life? Or did the event, was that only a sign of an inner holiness, an inner awakening or enlightenment that was then transferred to others to help them live a better life?
Well, there are other equally, you know, either disturbing or confusing ways of looking at it. I've been talking to a number of people lately about the idea of the holographic universe and parallel realities. So is a stigmata event something that's, excuse the pun, bleeding over from a parallel reality, from another time, from another place, from whatever it is? Which is not to say it's still not miraculous, you know, because we don't know what that means anyway. But is there something in some other plane of reality that's creating these events, which obviously we can't explain in our mundane understanding of cause and effect and linear time, which is usually how we try and figure things out?
Well, exactly. I would say that of all the things we may talk about this evening, the stigmata, because it's biologically focused, because mm-hmm. it's localized in a human body, I would say that if there were an overlaying, let's say there's an overlaying reality in the universe, I view the universe as sort of a bunch of folded sheets on top of each other. There are all these different realities, parallel universes, parallel times, times where we're occupying the same space at a different time or the same time in a different space, and where we get the whole concept of hauntings and cryptozoology and UFOs and all of that. This is the one thing I would say, if there is a universe overlaying, then perhaps that person is tapping into the other reality rather than the other reality tapping into them. In other words, if it's breaking through, it's breaking through in a place in the brain that can manifest injury without an external injury force. And that would be pretty amazing if we could figure out how to do that. One scientist was just able to control another scientist's hand using really a telepathy program in a computer. Right. So if that's possible, is there an intelligence hijacking the biology of someone like Padre Pio? And if so, for what purpose? So that's an interesting question you brought up.
Well, it's having it be an external consciousness or another person or another time is one way of looking at it. But even the hypnosis experiments years ago, and more recently, really smack of the idea that we have much more, if not conscious, than I'm struggling for the word, that we have more control over our physical bodies than we believe that we do, which of course then gets into what's the placebo effect and its evil twin, the nocebo effect. You know, one will make you better even though there doesn't seem to be a medical reason for you to get better, and the other one will make you worse even though there's no medical reason for you to get worse. And both of those are well documented. So is it a much more specific application of that kind of power of the mind? I don't know.
Well, it may not be, you know, anything from another reality. There's a secular explanation of psychogenic purpura, which is a spontaneous lesion or bruising on the body in response to suggestion. Mm-hmm. So hold that in your head. You know, the gentleman produced that was hypnotized produced bruises and burns on his wrist. Yeah. However, as soon as the suggestion ended, so did the wounds. They disappeared. Right. When you have someone like Padre Pio, the wounds remained open for 50 years. He bled a pint of blood a day. The wounds were of a whole lot, like a lesion type on the front and the back of the hands. They were well documented. They did not, and so for all the other stigmatists, they did not fester. They did not smell. Mm-hmm. Some of them released a perfume. But the interesting thing about it is they, for Padre Pio, they disappeared 3 days before he died. Disappeared. Wow. He woke up and he was completely healed, and he said his first mass without bleeding and died the next day. And, you know, you get something like that and you start to wonder, was it really a suggestion of the mind? And most of the stigmatists would tell you, I don't want it.
Right.
It's not fun. Right. So, you know, that's interesting. And some of these other miracles, like the hosts, are interesting in that, too.
Right. Well, there are some of them where we're not talking about people at all, and some of them that had to do with how people died. So the one about the communion wafer, I just find completely fascinating. Why don't you tell us about that one?
Sure. There are I think 80, what we call Eucharistic miracles. Really quickly, in Catholic theology, communion mass, where communion's given at every mass, is the center of the faith. It is believed that at a point in the mass, when the priest elevates the communion wafer, it becomes the body and blood of Christ in its substance, even though it still appears to be a communion wafer. And I think all of us can agree that something can be different from what it looks like. So this one is fascinating. We could talk about this in the overlay of reality, where the mind and the power of the mind can actually call down God, because at every mass, this miracle occurs. So anyway, it was in the 700s, the 8th century, that a monk at a friary doubted the what we call real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, that when he elevates the Eucharist, it becomes the body and blood, the wine becomes the blood of Christ. Doubted it completely. When he said the words of consecration, which is when he lifted the host and said, repeating Christ's word from the Bible from the Last Supper, this is my body, which will be given up for you. He raises the wafer. At that moment, the wafer started bleeding in his hand, and turned into a bloody piece of flesh in the presence of hundreds of witnesses. The priest freaked out.
Right.
Laid it down. He's hysterical. And everybody rushes forward. Now, this is in Lanciano, Italy. And what the host, we call it the host once it's consecrated, because you can't call it bread or a wafer because it's Christ, but we can't call it flesh either. So it's called a host, meaning it's hosting something else inside of it. And so they all ran up to look at this host. The amazing thing about this thing, first of all, is that we still have it. And I will post a picture of this in Padre Pio's hands, the stigmata, on the Facebook event page for this show so people can see. I'll do that during the commercial. We still have this host. All right. The wine in the chalice turned into human blood. After a while, a couple of days, the blood turned into these five pellets that were blood-like, but that were solid. The weird thing about the pellets is if they weighed them in any formation, they always got the same weight. So let's say the five pellets weigh 5 ounces. They would weigh 2 pellets, 5 ounces. They would weigh 2 pellets and 2 pellets, 5 ounces each scale. And they could not for the life of them figure this out, of course, and it's amazing. In 1971, I forget what he was. He was not just a biologist, but he was a specialist in human tissue. He examined the host of Lanciano, and he found, first of all, that it is an entire heart muscle consisting of, hold on, I wrote this down because I don't know biology, but it's absolutely extraordinary. Here it is. It contained, right, the myocardium, the endocardium, and the vagus nerve, as well as the left ventricle. So this slice, which is the size of those old half-dollar coins, right, this slice was done in a way that cannot be replicated even today with a laser, because it was a cross-slice diagonally, so that every single piece of the heart, with the exception of the right ventricle, was part of the slice. All right. The blood is clearly human. It's AB type blood. There were proteins in there that were found in normal fresh blood. So those little pellets still contain fresh blood proteins that should have burned off as soon as they hit the air. And this host has never decayed. Never. So you have this, and then in Santarém, Spain, there was a host that was consecrated in the 1500s. The same thing, it became a piece of flesh. That still bleeds. It's 600 years old. It still bleeds on holidays, and they collect the blood, and they use it to heal people. So that one's extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah, I could go with calling those miracles.
It's tremendous when you think about the theology of it is the body and blood, and we have over 80 miracles of it becoming the body and blood.
Right, but even without the theology, the manifestation of a piece of flesh like that, which never decays and which has a blood type and all of those things that you said that are not normally possible. That's miraculous. That's definitely unexplainable. We're coming up to the break. My guest tonight is Bishop Christina Rake. Her website is, cleverly enough, ChristinaRake.com. That's Christina with a K and Rake like the gardening implement, as she often says. And we're going to take a break for a few minutes, and we will be back shortly, unless we get taller. This is David Franklin Farkas on the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Insta-Do. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Bishop Christina Rake and Creepy Christianity. And I think it's pretty amusing that our last PSA was anything is possible, because certainly that's what we're talking about. So when we left, we were talking about the communion wafer turning into an actual piece of heart muscle and bleeding. And you said that that's documented in a large number of cases.
Yes, there, that one and the host at Santarém, Spain, are both still in existence, and you could go see them. I posted pictures of Lanciano's host on our Facebook event page for this show, and you could go take a look at those. So you have this miraculous issue of flesh and blood, and it's not just localized to Catholicism or Christianity. There is a statue in a Hindu temple. It's a statue of a cow, and it actually dispenses milk every week.
Wow.
So these amazing miracles occur in religions all around the world, these issues, I call them.
Right, right. And I've heard about some of the statues, the Hindu statues and the Buddhist statues that either bleed or give off other kinds of things, or fragrances, or any number of other things that have no logical explanation.
Exactly. And when you think about like quantum physics on a quantum level, what they call the particle wave dichotomy, it's really confusing. But if every single little piece of the universe, if you break it down to its smallest part, this little particle, it exists as a little ball. And it exists as a movement bouncing of a little ball, a particle or a wave. And it's both until you decide, I'm going to measure its width. And then it goes backwards in time and becomes a little ball so you can measure it. Or you say, I'm going to measure how fast it's bouncing. It goes backwards in time and becomes a wave. So if we can control reality at its most basic fundamental root, then you have to wonder, are miracles functions of a higher power, which I believe they are, or are they functions of an intense belief system by millions of minds focused on this? In the case of the host, everybody in the church is participating in the Mass. The word liturgy, liturgia, is Greek for the work of the people. And so it's something we're all doing. We're all focusing. We're all saying the prayer, yes, this is right. Yes, let this happen. Everybody believes it. And then you get something like this where it becomes what we believe it is anyway. It just has never appeared to be. It's so interesting when you get down into this where it's, you know, the chicken or the egg, the chicken or the egg, the chicken or the egg. It's very hard to figure out which one it is. And I guess everybody will come down on one side or the other. Or with me, it's never either or. The universe is a both and proposition. So it's always everything.
Right, right. And we understand so little. In all our brilliant scientific understanding, basically in less than, in what, 1,500 years, you know, the new kid on the block is science. But the explanations in the traditional indigenous spiritual practices, you know, the world of shamanism, go back, I think 9,000 years is the first recorded stuff on the wall of a temple somewhere. And all of that talks about the same kinds of things and the same kinds of methods of approaching those things and the same ways to get results and all the rest of it. So along comes science and says, well, we're going to look at it this way and we're going to ignore all of that stuff. It was wrong anyway. It was just superstition. Although there are not thousands or tens of thousands of scientists, but hundreds of scientists on the planet who are studying those phenomena to find out what's going on with that. You know, what is all this seemingly paranormal stuff? What is telepathy is one of the ones that's used a lot, or psychokinesis, the ability to move objects or change physical reality with the mind. There are people that are studying that. Dean Radin at the Institute of Noetic Sciences being one of them. So maybe we'll get there and have a better idea of how all this happens. But let's keep telling stories, because there are some other amazing things that you mentioned in the email you sent me.
Yes. Let's move to healings. Because I'm a healer and I'm fascinated. I don't understand how it works. I mean, I know what happens when I do it, and I know what the compulsion was to try it the first time. I don't know what happened. And this story absolutely amazed me. I did mention wards and one of the miracles there. I actually am going to backtrack to one gentleman who was healed at Lourdes of his issue. And this is amazing. I love this story. I'm studying this. I need to meet this guy. He was alive a few years ago. His name is Vittorio Micheli. All right. He was born in 1940 in Italy, and he was in the army. Well, he's admitted in 1962, and he has a hip injury. Well, they check it, and he's got a bone-eating cancer in there, And I feel for him because I had something similar in my jaw. And the bone-eating cancer ate his leg bone from the hip to the knee.
Wow.
He could take his leg and touch his heel to his ear and throw his leg over his shoulder. There was no bone. All right. So he goes to Lourdes and he bathes in the bath and nothing happens. Now, at Lourdes, France, in 1847, a young girl named Bernadette Ciboru went to this little, what's called a grotto. So it was a little bit of rock and an overgrowth of earth in there. And she saw a lady. And the lady told her, please keep coming back to see me. Eventually, on the eighth time that Bernadette went to see this beautiful lady, she told Bernadette, I am the Immaculate Conception, which Bernadette then reported to a priest who reported to a bishop who was incensed because this little illiterate girl couldn't possibly know that they were about to pronounce this doctrine called the Immaculate Conception about Mary, just saying that Mary was free from sin when she became pregnant with Christ because Christ would grow within her and his flesh had to be pure, so did her. So it's just an understanding of Christ. So anyway, when Bernadette dug under the earth, as the lady told her to, water sprung up. And this water miraculously heals people. So now there's a giant church, and there's what's called the Springs of Lourdes, or Lourdes water. Mm-hmm. People have little vials of it all over the place. I do upstairs. So this gentleman went and bathed there. Nothing happened. He went about his day. He comes back to the army hospital and he looks a little better and he's not in as much pain. Well, a week later, he's walking and they take an x-ray and there's a leg bone. There was no leg bone. Now there's a leg bone. Well, he allowed them to go in and take a sample of the bone. The bone was pure white, had no aging the way the bones around him did, no scarring from walking, nothing like a baby's bone. It had grown from stem cells. The bone grew inside of him out of stem cells that were in his bone marrow. So when you look at that, that's absolutely astonishing. But then there's that biological component of his body basically regenerated an entire piece of itself out of stem cells that were there. So that's amazing.
Which means that's a potential for healing in human beings. We don't know how it was initiated other than that it was there in that water. But we have now seen that the human body can do what a lot of reptiles can do, can regrow parts of the body.
Right. When you get a stem cell that's undifferentiated, and stem cells can be anything they want until DNA tells them, boom, you're a liver cell, boom, you're right. A bone cell. So his, somehow, even though there was no DNA inside them to tell them, knew, I'm going to be a leg bone. So if you think about that quantum physics use of the mind as an organizing principle for even the smallest component of reality, well, if that's what decides that reality is real, then you have to wonder what's keeping us real. There right. has to be an observing mind looking at us and holding us in existence that perhaps told those little stem cells you're going to be bone cells.
Well, that gets into my favorite analysis of a ghost story. There's a very common ghost phenomenon, which you probably know about, which is a person being awakened by the presence of a ghost. And when I do my talks about ghosts, I always ask, somebody usually says that happened to him. And I say, well, how many of you had that experience? And the groups are self-selecting because they came to talk about ghosts. But a substantial portion of the group will say that they've been awakened by a ghost. My follow-up question is, was it the presence of the ghost that woke you? Or was it that the ghost sat down on the mattress and the bed moved and that woke you up? And an extremely high percentage of people will report that it was the ghost sitting on the bed.
Wow.
Now, the ghost has no mass and is sitting down on an object which does have mass. You would think there's no way for the two to interact in the physical aspect of reality and have something happen. But there are reports of the beds on the Queen Mary having indentations looking like someone slept in it. Mm-hmm. And chairs in museums where there are indentations that look like somebody sat in it. They come in the morning and it looks like someone was sitting in the chair. But what I take from that, my interpretation is that the ghost doesn't know it's dead. And the ghost has expectations of what physical reality will do in response to what it does. And so when it sits on the bed, its expectation is that physical reality will respond. It's totally unconscious. But it expects the rules to work, and the rules work. And then my question is, if that's the case, maybe that's how Newtonian physics actually work. That in somewhere in DNA or in however it's coded in the mass consciousness, we understand what is supposed to happen and we keep it happening that way.
Exactly. And here's something from Cornell University. It's going to blow your mind. There was an audiology analysis of poltergeist raps, which is when, you know, the table or something knocks, but a poltergeist has done it. Now, when you look at the on a computer, when it turns the sound into a visible wave spectrum,
a
knock would suddenly shoot up sharply and then fall because the knock happens and then it falls. A poltergeist rap builds up. And up and up and up like a volcano, and then the noise happens. That tells me that the mind is exciting the particles inside the wood until they all get together and snap from the inside. It's as if the noise is going backwards.
Right.
And so tying to what you're saying, we can control this reality if we realize that the rules don't really apply.
right. Which is the message of a lot of the movie The Matrix. You know, there are rules.
I love that movie.
There are rules. Some can be bent, some can be broken completely.
Well, I always tell everybody.
Which gets back to my hacker metaphor of shamans being hackers. You know, it's like, well, what can I do here? Can I change this? Will this work? Oh, look at that. That happened. Son of a gun, can I do that again?
That's exactly. It's a beautiful metaphor of hacking into something. I mean, I tell everyone, perhaps there's no such thing as paranormal. Perhaps everything functions according to the rules of nature. But I would say that we don't know what the rules of nature really are.
Right. We understand a small subset which we've accepted as being the limitations of what can happen. And when anything happens outside of that small subset, we gasp and go, my goodness, it's a miracle, it's paranormal, it's whatever it is. That doesn't mean that it wasn't always working that way and we didn't notice or that we never tried.
Exactly. And tying into myself, a really brief self-revelation, I am a psychic medium, and I know things about people, a Holy Spirit thing. It's called reading the heart. I know things about people when I talk to them. I talk to dead people. I know names. I hear them. Well, interestingly, I had an actual brain scan because there was some concern that maybe there's something wrong with me at some point. And I had a beam test, which measures the firing of the neurons in the brain. It's a temporal lobe epilepsy test. Well, of the two, it was found that first, I can purposely cause synchronicity in my brain.
Yes.
But it is not epileptic. And two, I have an extra blood vessel in my right temporal lobe.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, but again, it's certainly not delusional when I know the names of people who died 20 years ago that I never met.
But well, my question is always, what do you do with the results?
Exactly. So perhaps there is some wiring. Perhaps there are rules we don't know. But even better, like you said, perhaps the limitations are there because we've all accepted them. And if we all believe that there were no limitations, what would happen to reality?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's part of the reason that conformity to the existing reality is important to the people that want to keep things the way they are.
Exactly.
So,
excuse me, I'm hacking over here. I apologize.
Yet another definition of hacking. Yeah.
I'm so elegant. I apologize. But well, yes. That's
well,
so
that you are, my dear. We just have a few more minutes. Do you have – wasn't there something about Saint Bernadette and her death that was also – was that the same person who had discovered the Lourdes?
That's correct. I posted her picture again on the Facebook page, but there is a thing in Catholicism called incorruptibility. And essentially it just says that some holy people, when they die, do not decay. Their bodies don't decay or experience corruption. And that's actually in the Psalms, that you would not let your servant touch death or experience corruption. Saint Bernadette looks like she's asleep. She's beautiful. I posted the link. St. Vincent de Sal, I'll post that picture too. It looks beautiful. St. Francis Xavier, the second founder of the Jesuits, one of the original companions, he died after doing a missionary trip in Japan in the 1500s. He was buried in an island there covered in lime, which is supposed to hurry decomposition. And they left him there for 3 years until his companions could come back, get his body, and they figured it'd be bones and easier to transport. The man looked like he had fallen asleep. He hadn't decayed at all. His body was still warm. And so this is, again, one of those stories, just one of those creepy things. And if you go to France, you walk into a church, you will see glass caskets with dead people in them just laying there as proof that sometimes the flesh is preserved and the rules of nature don't always apply.
Gotta love it. Well, Bishop Christina Rake, my wonderful guest for the umpteenth time, we have once again used up the entire hour, and there's always more to say. So thank you so much for introducing us to these amazing things that I didn't know anything about, and for the wonderful conversation, because we always have wonderful conversations, and we really must do this again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Always a pleasure, my dear. This evening's guest has been Bishop Christina Rake. You can find out more about her at christinarake.com. And as she likes to say, it's Christina with a K and Rake like the gardening implement. We will have the bishop on again, because there is no end to the topics and the mischief that we can get into. Thanks so much, Christina.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And if you've gotten curious about my work and what I do, please go to househealing.com. And on the contact page, you'll find every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment and evaluation of what's going on with whatever you're concerned about. And we can see whether my work will be useful in your situation. And You can find the archives for the Farkas Files and listen to this show and any of the previous shows, years now of shows, at thefarkasfiles.com and also on iTunes Podcast. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a wonderful week.